Major support for Out to Lunch is provided by the law firm of Jones Walker, established in 1937 with over 375 attorneys in offices throughout the U.S., providing a comprehensive range of services to a local, national, and international client base. JonesWalker.com.
From Tsunami Sushi in downtown Lafayette, we're Out to Lunch with Christian Mader, editor and publisher of The Current. It's business, Acadiana style.
Welcome to Out to Lunch. I'm Christian Mader. I had a journalism student approach me a while back for a story, and I asked him, what kind of journalist do you want to be when you grow up? And he said, a food writer, because AI won't take my job. And I thought, okay, won't it? I mean, I guess if they create a neural simulation of what it's like to eat boudin, they could. But the reality is the panic around AI is big, and that's mostly because few people really understand it. The models that are making headlines today, like ChatGPT, are really only the latest in a long line of advances in technologies designed to assist work. That's, you know, to make it easier on people. And most companies still rely on people, and they need people to be good at what they do. AI can make work more efficient, but can also help companies select and train their employees. And that's the concept behind ICANN, a company founded by my guest, David DeCure. David spent years in the oil and gas industry and noticed that workforce development there was a big problem. His company employed lots of people, but they struggled to make sure they all knew what they were doing. So he developed a new training program for his employer and cut $2.5 million off their annual bottom line. Saving money is making money in business, so David struck out on his own and ICANN was born. ICANN's cloud-based software helps companies set up custom platforms that use chatbots to train employees in anything from HR guidelines to procedures to how to make a king cake. And since launching full-time in 2022, ICANN has expanded from the energy industry to work with utilities and processing facilities. David grew up in Lafayette and currently lives in the Geismar, Dutchtown area. David DeCure, welcome to Out to Lunch.
Thank you.
So helping companies get better is a massive industry. We generally call them consultants, and their product lines can range from expert assistance to IT. And if you're in Lafayette, you've probably heard of CGI, and you probably think of it as a tech company, but it's better understood as a consulting firm, and it's one of the largest in the world. My guest, Will Abar, is the VP of Consulting Services for CGI and has worked for the company out of Lafayette since 2000. Will was CGI employee number one in the Lafayette market?
Possibly so.
CGI employs hundreds in the area. Will is in charge of CGI's onshore delivery program, and he leads a team that helps smaller markets get in technology jobs, coordinating between local governments, business sectors, and universities. Will grew up in New Jersey and has worked for CGI since 1998. Will Abar, welcome to Out to Lunch.
Excited to be here. Thank you.
David, companies typically already have some kind of proprietary training program, I would think. And I would especially think like really big companies. But you say that what you do is sort of like their Blockbuster and your Netflix. How is that?
So, yeah, traditionally, when you think about like computer-based training and stuff like that, there's a few models, right? There was, I'm going to buy this huge library of content, probably only going to use 10% of it. It's going to be very generic because it's kind of for everybody. Yeah. Model two is I'm going to buy software to build my own content, and then I still have to provide a subject matter expert, and that's going to take, you know, months to get out the door. And then version three of that is I'm just going to pay another company to do it and build it all on their own, and I still have to provide an SME, and that's expensive. So what we've done is in our software now, you can come in, you type in any topic in the world. It doesn't matter if it's something very technical or HR related or how to bake a king cake. And you type it in, you hit how many sections you want, and you tell it to generate, and then our language model basically will write the content for every single one of those sections specific to the topic. It'll then design pictures specific to the topic, and then it'll do the voiceover in any language in the world that you need it to, and it happens instant, and it's custom to your facility, your company, to where you can deploy computer-based training in minutes, where this used to take months and hundreds of thousands of dollars.
What's the feed for that? Because language models, right, they need a source to draw from. They can operate sort of like search engines, but I mean, anybody who's kind of like pulls up a random headline about ChatGPT hears about like hallucinating language models have a tendency to just sort of make things up. I mean, yep. How do you make sure that there's quality control around something that could theoretically do anything?
No, that's a great. So when you heard me talk about the subject matter expert being able to do it, so making the system intuitive to where a subject matter expert familiar with what they're looking at is the one doing the design. What's coming back in everything that they're getting is rationales and references. So it's giving them references that they can go to like the Code of Federal Registry, you know, OSHA or DOT or whatever, and they can verify that what the model came back with is absolutely correct. And then if it's not correct, they can delete it or they can tweak it. And sometimes they actually can change it because their policies are more stringent than what the federal regulation is. And then on top of that, we can actually point our software at these different companies, because in the next probably 3 years, and we'll probably talk a little bit about that, is you'll see the majority of companies have their own language model with their own chat bots trained on their own data. Mm-hmm. So we have the ability to point at those when, as those companies come along, to where when you type a topic in, it's pulling specific to their data, nothing out on the internet or anything.
Will, if I ask you if that's a thing you're working on, are you giving up trade secrets?
We are absolutely working on that. In fact, we are already doing it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, I do want to talk a little bit first, though, about the onshoring concept, right? I mean, you're bringing jobs to the U.S. is sort of the idea here, and like, if you're targeting these markets that may not already have tech sectors, right, it seems like you might have a bit of a chicken and egg problem, right? You have to have the skilled workforce to do it. So, I mean, how does that ecosystem develop out of whole cloth? If you don't have sort of tech jobs, how do you get them, is I guess my question.
Yeah. Well, so that kind of goes back towards kind of probably our methodology for how we select a city like Lafayette. So we're looking for the right mix of partners that are in that community, as well as like a pretty strong understanding of the historical job market and where the talent is or where it's went, essentially. So if you look at Lafayette, we picked the city because the university has one of the best computer science programs in the country. In fact, the first computer science program in the country.
Yeah.
We knew there was a lot of out-migration of technology-related talent. We knew that the culture here was incredibly sticky and something that people, if you grow up here, you typically want to come back here. If you experience it, you think about moving here. So we knew there was like a high boomerang quotient of that. And then there's a lot of other companies that are in Lafayette that do have a technology workforce. And so we knew that like there was an existing like upper level of the pyramid talent pool that might be interested in doing work for a company like us. And we knew that we can partner with UL to help, you know, customize their curriculum to create the talent that we need. And then you bring in the local and state government partners, and they have different tools that help companies like us do this. Mm-hmm. So like that, we're looking for all those pieces coming together in order to figure out the right place to locate a center like we have in Lafayette.
I mean, David, you're starting a technology company in this area. I mean, were you resourcing your employees here? I mean, how did you find, like, working with language models is not the same thing as just sort of coding, right? I wouldn't think, or I'm not a coder, so I don't know. So you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I guess it seems like a specialized skill set, I guess I'm saying. So you have this idea to do something. How easy was it for you to find a person to implement it?
It's incredibly difficult to find like qualified developers, actual computer scientists and stuff. So they're like CGI strategy spot on, like setting up next to universities that are pumping out, you know, some of the best computer science students in the country. That's like the most powerful recruiting tool that you have. So when we looked for hiring, we were looking at, you know, Lafayette, Baton Rouge, New Orleans, where you had really strong computer science programs coming out of it. So
yeah. I mean, what's the pool like the workforce pool, I should say, for people who work in AI specifically? I mean, do you have a sense of like what that workforce looks like in the U.S. It does seem like it would be...
It's very small. What's crazy
highly
about
specialized,
it
right?
Is like, because AI, like when you talk about it, I mean, a lot of like regression analysis AI has been around since like the 70s, right? And when you think of like spatial geometry, like, you know, facial recognition, that technology has been around since like 2000. The big stuff everybody talks about nowadays, language models, right? That, your most like expert on that, has probably only got 2 or 3 years of experience. It's not, they're not, you know, because it's such a new technology that people are getting used to and stuff, that expertise, it's not like you don't find an AI engineer that specifies in LLMs that's been around for 20 years, because it didn't exist for 20 years. So it is very niche to find those people.
But when you think about AI, like in a broader sense too, like that workforce pool is growing rapidly as well though, because like, if you look at what we're doing with UL right now, so we've had a program working with their computer science and informatics students for about 9 years now, where we're teaching them how to do the stuff we do on real world problems. This year we introduced generative AI into the mix. And so like, they are using those large language models right, to create software, but it can only create like different parts of it. And so now the job is like stitching that together so that it works well together, deploying that to the cloud. So like those students will graduate, you know, 45 of them that we're training today with experience in using those large language models to build software. So like it's not just LLMs that we're looking for experience on, it's people who know how to use these tools and know how to bring the subject matter expertise, like ICANN's looking for in their training software, in order to build the solutions we need for our clients. Right?
Is this the sort of thing that, so I'm just going to make my, just put on the table I'm a Luddite, right? I run a digital news publication, but don't let that be anything that leads you to believe I know what I'm doing. But, you know, I'm thinking about how this has sort of developed in the news, right? You have, you know, OpenAI as a company, sort of the group that's sort of most well-known at this point, right? And it seems like it sort of happened out of nowhere, right? So if you're just a regular person, you're not tracking this stuff like you guys do professionally, you have this sense that this advancement has just sort of happened. And so I guess my question from people that operate this from the business side, right, is are we going to get into a situation coming up where it's like OpenAI is going to be Microsoft and everybody's licensing their version of an LLM, or are your companies all sort of trying to create their own, you know, proprietary versions of these models to be able to do what they do? Like, how does this actually play out in the next 5 years in terms of a business development, if that makes any sense?
Do you want to tackle that one first?
That's kind of what I was saying when we started, where the next 3 years, you know, basically every company will have their own language model that's trained, you know, specific to their data and stuff like that. And that technology is moving at such a fast pace. I mean, just in the time that we've been building different pieces of our software, we've had to continuously update things because of like new models coming out and stuff like that. So it's rapidly changing, and it's, you know, in the next 3 years, you know, every company, including like, you know, Tsunami, where we're at, they will actually have some form of an LLM that they're using for looking at, you know, their menu options and, you know, seeing what works best at what times and how to sell it.
You're listening to Out to Lunch. I'm Christian Mader. I'm talking to David DeCure, founder of ICANN, and Willa Barr, VP of Consulting Services at CGI. Well, I mean, help me understand something about this. I mean, I'll kind of point this to you because you kind of work in a larger company here, Will. I mean, like, but businesses license software all the time, right? Like, they come and get, like, Microsoft suites, you know, Oracle, like, you know, enterprise-level solutions for Google or whatever. Why wouldn't we be doing the same thing with LLM?
Well, I think that's exactly what we're doing. We are licensing large language models from providers, and we're training them on the data that's specific to those businesses.
Yeah. Okay.
So like our clients and even CGI itself, we're training those language models on like our point of view in the market. And so like we have an assistant that is like the voice of CGI that our members can use to help us understand how we feel about regulatory changes impacting the financial services sector.
Right.
Right. And I think in, you know, his example, it's like employees at a Tsunami could interact with an assistant here that's trained on Tsunami's employee policies.
Right.
And so you want to leverage the models that are being created by those big brains out there, right? And you want to train them on your data, and then you got to figure out how you integrate that into the governance model of how you run your business. What is your operational model to use those types of tools so that you're not violating employee privacy, like you've got the right security controls around it, you're training your people on it. Those are the other big business challenges I think that organizations face as they adopt this type of technology.
So I do have a, can I ask a question?
Absolutely.
So one of the, like, when I think about what CGI would be working on in setting up a language model, that piece, it's really not that difficult. Y'all are probably more focused on how to digest a company's data to train the language model. Because like companies have vast amount of data,
right,
but how much of that data is relevant, and then how much of that data is in the format that you need it to be able to train the model? That's always been, you know, that's usually the challenge.
Yep. And that's absolutely a big part of what we're focused on. Yeah. It's and then as I was mentioning, like on top of that, how do you operationalize it in an organization? How do you set up the right environments where you can experiment in your organization safely? And after you're done with experimentation, how do you then enhance that and scale it?
Yeah.
Right? And so we're focused on helping our customers almost like democratize that across their organization so it could be used across their business or in the government sector, whatever it may be.
Yes, yep. That's huge.
Yep.
You said safely. What's unsafe?
Well, there's a lot of things I think that go into that question. So first of all, like you said, if you Google anything about AI, you're going to read about like bias in the models. because inherently, if you're training it on data, and if there's bias in that data, the results that's coming out of the models might have that bias baked into it. But there's other things too, like you need to be aware of how when you're interacting with a model, like where the data you're putting into it is going. And so especially in the federal government space, you need to have, and even in the commercial space too, you need to make sure that when your employees are interacting with these tools, that the privacy of the data that they're putting in there is protected, whether it's from a business perspective or an individual perspective, right? So I think that's a big part of what we mean when we say safely.
No, he's that spot on. Like one of the biggest dangers that people are faced with right now is how much proprietary data is getting put onto the public sector. People not realizing that when they're copying and pasting documents from their company and they're putting it into these different chat bots you named a few already, but you can go and access, they're copying and pasting that in there. That language model's learning from that. So, and it can't unlearn from it. So you're having issues now where people are taking proprietary information, you know, the secret sauce, trying to ask it to like reword the document or something, and it's learning off of that to where the competitor is now typing in something and getting some of that information back. So that's the big danger right now, is people not understanding the risk of what they're doing when they're, you know, just copying and pasting documents in there and stuff like that.
I mean, does that come up with your customers or new customers are coming up? I mean,
the question's always there. So two biggest questions: hallucination, obviously, you know, how do you know the information's right? And then how do we know it's not trained on our data? So our language model, how it's set up is, you know, it's behind Microsoft Azure. It's our own instance. It's not like a ChatGPT or anything. So we have it set up where it does not learn from it. So if you would paste the document in, it will read the document and it'll use that document to create the content, but it won't train the model, or, you know, so you don't have to worry. And then when I talked about like reference and rationale, so I think because AI of LLMs is so new, it's, you know, Will could probably talk better about it. Like, people are all over the spectrum. You have some people that you talk about AI and they're thinking the Terminator, and then you have other people that are, you know, they think about LLMs and they think about all the cool stuff that it's doing right now. And I think just educating people on that is really important. What I try to tell people, because everybody says, this is going to take my job, right? It's always what you hear. And what I tell people is the best way to think about large language model AI is it will do exactly what the calculator did for math. It's going to make it faster, better, easier. I can pull it out on my phone, or I can pull up a calculator, I can do my equations and hit enter. I don't need the spreadsheet, not, you know, and writing it all down anymore. Yep. That's exactly what language models will do for language, is instead of you having to write a 4-page document, it'll write the 4-page document instantly, and then you're critiquing it to make it the best document that ever existed, and you're doing it in a tenth of the time that it traditionally would take you.
Yeah. It'll change the way you do your job.
Yeah, yes. It'll change the way you do your job.
100%.
Will, where do you lie on that spectrum? Are you a Skynet guy, or are you an AI is LLM? AI is a large calculator kind of guy.
Yeah, I think I fall more in towards the latter, for sure. You know,
so, sure.
I mean, there's obviously risks that, that we cannot ignore, I think, the disruption that a technology like this will have in the workforce.
Sure.
You know, like if we just gloss over and say it's going to be all right, like then that's probably folly as well, right? So
you would seem to be in an interesting position here, right? Because you're developing with this within your own company. You're also consulting. Your CGI's, you know, part of its job is to help businesses find efficiencies, and efficiencies often is code word for firing people, right? When you can. And I'm not saying that that's what you're always recommending, but like my point is that it. Clearly, you have to be clear-eyed about how this works. I mean, I've heard people make both arguments, that this will expand workforces because there are going to be new technologies require new kinds of workers, right? So, I mean, how do you see balancing that? I mean, what is the actual balance on that in the long run?
Yeah, so, correct, you're right. We're not in the business of firing people at all, just to put that on the record.
Okay. So you put
state
leave
that
those
one
words
more time.
Leave those words in my mouth. That's fine. But I mean, I'm just sort of saying, at some level, right? Efficiency is efficiency, wherever
absolutely.
You cut it. You know, so understandably, people get a little nervous about the idea that if this thing could do my job,
not new, right?
Right.
Like back
absolutely.
When I started in consulting in '98, early 2000, I was in sessions with clients talking about introducing you know, a new web application into how they do work, yep. and there were people afraid of losing their job then.
Right.
And they continued working, but the nature of their job changes, and hopefully what we're doing is taking some of the stuff off of their plate that is repetitive and yep. redundant, and allowing them to work on, like, you know, higher level functions within the organization, increasing the value,
right?
But ultimately, like, you're right, like, with efficiency comes possibly with a less need for some portion of the workforce.
Sure.
And so that goes back to kind of some of the things we're focused on, which is, as you introduce this, how do you cross-train your workforce or upskill your workforce, and so that it's less disruptive?
Yeah.
And so, like, a strong strategy on AI should recognize that, not shy away from it, and then figure out what that's going to mean for your human capital strategy in the long term.
How long does it take a company the size of CGI to see something like this coming, right? I mean, I'm thinking again about, like, the consumer experience is like, yeah. this. It's almost like you would think that this thing came from nowhere, but
yeah.
clearly people have been researching, developing this. I'm sure you could pick up a trade journal and know yeah. that it was happening. And so it's like, I understand the space is moving quickly, but does a company like CGI see this coming in 10 years and start adjusting? Is it 2 years? I mean, give me a sense yeah. of, like, how this falls on sort of your planning horizon.
Yeah, it's that's an interesting question. So it's been in our strategy, for, as you said, for years, because we hired someone at Lafayette recently, and she was introducing herself to someone. She's like, I've been doing AI for the last 15 to 20 years because, like, I was basically creating, like, machine learning models. Yeah. We just weren't calling it what everyone's looking at in the news today as, right? So we have a process, actually. It's a rolling 3-year cycle, like where we interview our clients every year that informs our 3-year strategic plan.
Yeah.
And AI, machine learning, automation has been, like, a theme coming from those clients across 10 different industry verticals for many, many years now. So, like, we knew this is coming, which is why we make strategic investments in it, you
yeah.
know? I think in the last, you know, several years, it's obviously become much more prevalent, for sure. In fact, we just announced about maybe a year ago that we're investing $1 billion over the course of 3 years in artificial intelligence
yeah.
for both our clients and our own operations and our workforce.
David, you've got, I'm sure, have a perspective on this, just having kind of, you know, had an idea for a way to solve a problem. And just correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't get the impression that, like, you started with this is going to be an automated process maybe, but saw that there was a weakness in workforce development generally, and maybe landed on this as the solution. I mean, talk me through, like, your own process from going to, like, hey, there's a need here
yeah.
to help companies in this way, and AI is actually the tool that's going to get them there.
So when we started the business, basically what we were doing was we were using, like, crowdsourcing. So all of these subject matter experts in these very technical fields were feeding into these competency libraries. And then the library, our customers had access on day one, so they could walk out the door and start assessing their operators, their mechanics, their INEs on their technical skill sets. That data was coming back, and that was giving us industry benchmarks. So for the first time in history, customers could not only see how that employee was doing compared to everybody in their company, but everybody that's in that industry. So thousands and thousands of assessments. So that was where we started. And then, but there was still always the gap of, like, how are you training people and stuff? And so we had basically a marketplace set up to where, and we still do, to where you can load your own content, or we have vendors from all over the world that you can buy specific content for. But it was always that same question of, hey, you know, we're seeing, like, you know, it's not generic, it's not specific to us. So we kept seeing that coming up. We had been, you know, like, regression analysis AI and stuff like that, I've been doing that in, like, hand calculation with Excel for years. I mean, we were, you know, the Robert, our CTO, who's, you know, his thesis in 2006 when he was doing his master's was on, like, facial recognition AI to be able to look at the frequency of a skin color to be able to predict who people were. So that all was all happening before. So basically that way of kind of putting it together is, you know, so we were early to the game, which is, you know, good for us that now it's out while other people are still trying to figure out, is this the Terminator? Is this, you know, is this going to take my job and all the other things? But I agree with Will 100%. Is it will not, like, anything where you're moving just from one block to the next, that's always been the case with automation. It's always open to be automated out. But if you notice, those populations don't go away. They begin to get reskilled and upskilled to do other things. So what our customers do with our content now, they come in and are typing content, and developing training to basically reskill those people that they know automation is going to affect them, and they're training them on what the job will be once that automation comes in. So they're not saying, hey, once this comes out, we're letting you go. We're saying once it comes out, this is going to be your new job, and here's the training that we're going to give you to prepare for that.
This is going to be your new job. I mean, I think that's I think that's the theme here. I mean, at some level, right, everybody's just trying to keep up with technology. I mean, I know we are in the journalism space, and, you know, it's always exciting stuff to talk about just because this stuff is so fascinating, whether it might well kill us at the end of time or just make our lives a little bit easier. And Will and David, thanks for joining me here on Out to Lunch Acadiana. My guests on Out to Lunch Acadiana today have been David DeCure, founder of ICANN, and Will DeBar, VP of Consulting Services at CGI. We edited this conversation to fit into our time slot here on KRVS. You can hear our unedited conversation to find out about Will and David by listening to the Out to Lunch Acadiana podcast. You can find and subscribe on your podcast app and on our website, itsacadiana.com. If you want to know what we all look like, you can find photos from this show on itsacadiana.com and on our Out to Lunch Acadiana social media. These photos were taken by Dylan Babineau. Out to Lunch Acadiana is a production of INO Broadcasting for itsacadiana.com and KRBS 88.7 FM. The producer of our show is Grant Morris. Our technical producer is Eric Merle. Our associate producer is Chad Terrio. And our researcher is Leah Erdialis. Today's show was engineered by Dylan Babineau. I'm Christian Mader, editor of The Current, Lafayette's nonprofit newsroom. And to get the scoop on Lafayette, head over to thecurrentla.com and sign up for our free newsletters. We'll see you next time for more business and conversation on Out to Lunch Acadiana. See you later.
Out to Lunch Acadiana was recorded live over lunch at Tsunami Sushi on Jefferson Street in downtown Lafayette. Tsunami is open Tuesday through Saturday for lunch and dinner, serving sushi, sashimi, salads, and authentic Japanese grilled dishes. Tsunami welcomes casual dining or reservations. More information at servingsushi.com. Major support for Out to Lunch is provided by the law firm of Jones Walker, established in 1937 with over 375 attorneys in offices throughout the U.S., providing a comprehensive range of services to a local, national, and international client base. JonesWalker.com. Mitchell Foreman wrote and performs all the music on Out to Lunch. You can hear Mitchell's music anywhere great jazz is sold or streamed, and at MitchellForeman.com. If you'd like to be part of Out to Lunch, to learn how your business or organization can become an Out to Lunch program partner, email info@inobroadcasting.com.